This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest municipal employee union. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. You simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. Members, there are now more ways to stay in touch with your union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about our show or would like us to help promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's State of the Union, one word, at dc37.net. Talking tonight with DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido, joins us by phone. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. You are part of, we'll begin the conversation by talking about the census. And you are part of State Census Commission, which issued a report on the 2020 census plan and other issues. And the New York State Complete Count Commission is made up of executive and legislative branch appointees. And it spent months holding hearings across the state to solicit input on the challenges posed by the census and how the state should respond. What is the importance of the census?
Well, I mean, with so much going on, I think this is probably one of the most underrated issues that are affecting, that will be affecting our community here in New York, which is essentially very simple. Every 10 years, there's a census done. And that census determines funding for what is now close to $700 billion worth of federal money in distribution for the municipalities and for the states, from everything from housing to health care to education to how much money they apportion for redistricting and election. Everything is determined by the census data that is done every 10 years. And New York is on the risk of losing a tremendous amount of power, influence, and money by not completing or not doing as well in terms of the census data. Last year, for instance, last time that this was done, I should say, last 10 years ago, in the 2010 census, we only captured 65% of the people who were responding. Right here in New York, even less than that, about 62.9%. Now think about it, right? That's 35%, about 35% of the people were not counted.
That's a huge number.
That is a huge number. So this year, if the same percentages would be applied, New York would lose at least two congressional seats and hundreds of billions of dollars over the next decade, just because we're being undercounted. And, you know, I think that there's a defining moment here, not just for the progressive union movement, but for the unions to take a stake on it. And we have made it this a huge priority, not only because our members live within the five boroughs and the communities, and they avail themselves of all these programs, they're taxpayers, and they deserve to be counted, but also because our members work on a lot of these programs that would be affected by the lack of funding if we didn't do a proper census count. And we're very concerned about, in the commission, what we have seen already to be the most vulnerable points and areas where people can be undercounted. And New York runs the risk of undercounting more than 5 million people.
Do we understand?
About half of that is in New York, and we think we need to make a big push to get everybody counted in the census.
Do we understand why they haven't been counted? Do we understand what that decline is about?
Well, it's interesting because obviously a lot of people assume that immigration is an issue, and it is. And part of it has to do with, President Trump did not help by insisting that the citizenship question be put on the census.
Right, right.
Even though the court says that he could not do that, he's insisting that the question is there. So a lot of the immigrants who are here, you know, whether they're documented or not, feel that this is only for citizens. So obviously the non-citizen that are residing here, even those who are residing with, you know, permanent legal residence, tend to not respond. And that's a big part of the population. But, I mean, I am more concerned about some of the other areas. Oh, I'm equally concerned about some of the areas that are coming up. One of the biggest aspects of the undercounting affects children. Children in the household who have been born, obviously, since the last census. They don't,
right.
They're not anywhere. So there's no continuity, right? So there's a big difference this year around in the census in that the census will be done electronically. 80% of all the responses are expected to be done, you know, electronically, you know, email, phone,
right,
social media, things of that nature. And you'll be able to respond to a census. Those children are the most vulnerable because they're too young to have access to it, even though a lot of them are using technology. They don't have email. And so there's over a million children that are likely to be not counted if we don't do this, you know, well, and if we don't do as well in trying to reach to them.
Now, in the past, my recollection is that something was sent to me in the mail, and they asked me to fill it out, and then I returned it. And if I didn't receive it, I would get phone calls from people saying, please fill out your census form. Or there would be people going from house to house. Is that not being done in this census? Are we moving completely to electronics, or is it a mix of different ways in which they're trying to get the count?
Well, no, I mean, it will be done differently. Some of what you said will be done, but the target is this is a big difference. You will get in the mail a piece of literature and giving you a number, a code, that is, that you can go online and use that code to
gotcha.
Be counted. And if you can count, you can count the members of your household
right.
and whatnot. That is, the target is to do that 80%, which did not happen 10 years ago. And then, as opposed to mail returns or surveys, census data, that is not what will happen this time around. And then the remaining 20% of household then will be receiving visits, door knocking and everything else. But as you know, and the city and the state are hiring hundreds of thousands of workers, you know, 160,000 workers in the federal government to go out there and knock on people's door to get the other 20%. But it is a problem getting to people because once they get there, if you're not there, you're not counted, period. It's
right.
not like a repeat visit. So it's a hit or miss. Some of the neighborhoods where it's the most population, in some parts of Queens, in Brooklyn, the percentage of people who were seen was in the 40s, 40% of the people. And so there are major concerns about pockets in the city that will result in major reduction of their undercounting, which will have a tremendous effect, you know, right here in the way that we receive funding from the federal government.
And you're saying, just to clarify, you're saying that this puts at risk the amount of representation and the amount of dollars that come into the city and the state for programs and the like, and that perhaps some of this concern by immigrants is about retribution or punishment for their status. Is that correct?
Right. And it's not retribution or punishment just from the perspective of people are going to be arrested or people are going to be deported. It's the fact that the questions now are whether you are a citizen or not, which is an illegal question. It was an illegal question before President Trump proposed it. It is an illegal question as affirmed by the court today. And yet the president, is still insisting that the citizen question will be on the census data that you get there, on the forms that you complete, which is completely illegal, in my opinion. And so I think this is a way of deterring people for not being counted. The U.S. national average on the census the last time in 2010 was 76%. New York City came in at 62%. That's 14% below the national average.
Yep, that's a problem.
And that 14% represents billions lost as a result of the last decade. And we cannot afford that again.
We're talking with DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido. He is a member of the New York State Complete Count Commission and pushing everyone to please respond to the census and to be counted in the 2020 census. This is going to take place over the next couple of months till the end of the year. Is that what happens? How does this process unfold?
So the beginning of the census will start in March.
Oh, it's next year. It's next year.
Okay. Sorry. But what is happening now is that New York City and New York State will be going through the process of selecting the support service mechanism, because most of it is run by the federal government. New York City and New York State is just making a push to make sure that that remaining percentage of folks that were not counted last time, that they're counted this time, right? The 38% that New York City didn't, by addressing the typical challenges. So some of them are things like outreach in various languages. And you know, New York have, we have over 200 languages here in New York, and that's a challenge. So New York City and New York State are now going through the process of an RFP and a selection process to select those nonprofits that are going to be helpful in completing that task. The budget that we just got passed on July 1st allocated about $40 million in New York City for the census in various capacity, both at the nonprofit level, to reach out to those vulnerable population and those individuals who traditionally have not been completing the census data. There's a partnership with Central Labor Council that all the unions have basically pledged to support the census data. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done now where, you know, but in terms of timeline, we should, you know, the citizens should start, of New York should start receiving information by March. And by citizen, I don't mean
You're
a citizen. Right. I mean
the people of New York City.
People of New York City, I should clarify, should begin to receive that in March. And then they have an opportunity to return that or to go online and complete it. And then for those who don't complete it by May, then the door knocking begins. So the more we can get electronically, and the good news is you could do it with your phone. It's very quickly. It takes about 2 minutes for you to complete the form. So that's the good news. The explosion and having a technology would facilitate so that you don't have to buy a stamp or go to the post office and do all that stuff. You know, the difficult news is that we know that in New York there's a major digital divide in access to broadband, and especially in those targeted population has been vulnerable. And so we are doing a big effort in that, you know, citizens can go into, or the New Yorkers can go into public libraries. All of the libraries are now certified as census hubs that people can literally walk in and fill out if they wanted to. We're looking to expand that to other city agencies. We think that city agencies where people go and get services are going to be a critical function of this. But this is going to determine funding for the next decade until a new census coming. So it's very important that we get it right.
And as you pointed out,
get everybody counted.
As you pointed out, we lost two seats in the last census, the two House seats. There are two fewer people, two fewer representatives representing the state of New York in 2019 than there were in 2010, right? Is that right?
Correct. And we're likely to lose more than that. If we keep the same percentage with the population growth in New York State and in New York City since the 2010, imagine how many new people are coming to the city and the state.
Right.
We are likely to lose more and more representation in Congress because of it. So this has tremendous implication everywhere.
We're talking with Henry Garrido, the executive director of DC 37. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk more about what's going on at DC 37.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. We are with DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido. Henry, it was a busy summer. We had a historical event take place within the union. We unified with what was DC 1707 and the six locals of DC 1707 and the 20,000 members of 1707. And what is the consequences of that? What are the potential for that? What is the significance of bringing the two unions together?
I mean, this is historical in many ways. This is something that, you know, had been contemplated for years now, but that we finally got it done by, you know, sort of rolling up our sleeves and looking at what was needed for the workers. So the immediate impact is 22,000 new members are coming into DC 37. That combined with the growth that we've done have brought up DC 37 to now be 150,000 members. And the retirees, which used to be around 50 to 55,000, are now have grown tremendously to close to 100,000. And this is a tremendous achievement for us, not just because for the sake of unification, but because immediately both the leaders of 1707's old locals and ourselves begin to tackle some of the most endemic problems that they've had with, contracts that have been lagging for years and salary equity and challenges with a pension that were mutually affecting DC 37 cultural institutions and also the participants of the nonprofit world and the early childhood world. And not only were we successful in our unification, and bringing the six new locals into DC 37 with the additional 22 members, but immediately because of that work and the work that we did, we deliver for our members pay equity that they've been fighting for over 25 years.
It's a huge deal.
And that is a huge deal. Just think about a certified teacher with an MA who works under the contract with the United Federation of Teachers was making close to $22,000 more than the people represented on the local 205, 95, or 215. So we have been able to negotiate contracts so they receive the same raises. So for those workers, they're going to receive $22,000 in raises. And for the support service staff and the other certified teachers, you know, tremendous gains. And from signing bonuses to increases that they have not gotten in at least two rounds of negotiations, you know, ever since the Bloomberg came in and restructured completely the early learn program, which aimed to completely restructure the 0 to 5 PK, 3K delivery of childhood programs, along with some social services and Head Start. So immediately, not only did we unify throughout the summer, but also immediately delivered to the members historic gains. We managed to lower the co-pays for health insurance. We managed to get funding directed to the pensions so their pensions are not at risk. And that saved the pension for both the nonprofit provider members who are part of it, but also for the unionized members who work for the zoos and the aquariums. So this is, again, a historical moment for us.
It also brings together the private sector and the public sector in a way that is unprecedented for us, correct? I mean, this is, as you say, enormous opportunity can come out of this.
Yes, and you know, we're now in the process of launching a massive organizing campaign. There's over 100,000 workers that are non-union in the nonprofit work, and sort of combining what we do well on the private sector, what we know about benefits, resources, insurance, and all that stuff that could be beneficial. We are making a case for the workers and, quite frankly, the providers, that they're better off having a union advocating on their behalf. And, you know, extremely proud of how this union has handled, extremely proud of how the leadership of the locals of 1707 have been participating, have been actively participating. And so we're very proud of that. Again, historic gains. So now is a way of, you know, changing at a time where DC-37 has also began to embarked on the restructuring that would include moving out of the union building at 125 Barclay Street into 55 Water Street, where we are today temporarily, and begin the process of reconstructing our building structure on 125 Barclay Street, reconstructing our healthcare center in Chambers Street and in Brooklyn, redoing our dental program, and doing a lot of stuff. So it's been a busy season, certainly the summer, and what's follow up to that in the early fall has been tremendous, the work that we've done. And I couldn't be any more proud of the way the union has responded to all these challenges.
And this is about, just to reiterate what you just said, there is enormous work going on the infrastructure of DC-37 to make the union more service-friendly for members, right? I mean, this what I'm hearing you talk about is services for members and upgrading those services.
Yeah, I mean, it's the services for members is facing the challenges of, you know, Janus is being more membership-oriented, service-oriented. It's also a way of doing work more efficiently, you know, infusing technology to allow us to be, you know, more user-friendly to all our members. And, you know, we have to make a major capital investment. Our building got hit by, you know, from September 11 to Hurricane Sandy to a number of other city ordinances that required us to do everything from the sprinkler system to the air conditioning to everything that has to be done. So it is our headquarters, our home. People feel very close to it. I certainly feel very close to it. I've been there for 23 years working for the union, and, you know, they're proud of it. And this is an opportunity for us to fix our own home and at the same time to do it in a way that challenges us to meet the physical structure of the future and a combined new union that sees growth as one of the potential, but that is also needs to remember to deliver to its members the best quality care possible. And that's what we're doing. And, you know, I'm glad to see the plans are moving along and the members are accepting the change and the challenges that come with those changes.
The election is underway. This is, I think, the first time we're doing early voting, but November 5th is Election Day, and on the ballot there are charter revision proposals. And can you talk a little bit, we've got about 4 minutes left, can you talk a little bit about the importance of the charter revision and why it's important that our members get out and vote?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that because of the midterm presidential election not taking place now, people forget that we have an election in New York City. On November 5th, the New York voters will go into the ballot box to select the public advocate. And then there's a number of other pieces that are not necessarily tied to a particular candidate. There are charter revision proposals. There are five in total, which will determine sort of like how the city will run itself. You know, there are 21 questions out of those five charter revision. There are five questions.
There are five proposals.
There are five proposals with 21 questions. I'm sorry.
Right.
That determine everything from rank voting on one end to how the budget is done and how it is reported. We are in support of four of those provisions, including the way that city is going to do policing with the Civilian Complaint Review Board. But we are against one of them, which is proposal number four, that would allow for the tapping into a rainy day fund or creation of a rainy day fund that we think would be dangerous for a budget to have at the behest of folks that are going to be doing or controlling that budget that exists right now. The city has several funds. We believe this is not a good idea, and so we're urging our members to vote yes on all the proposals of the charter revision, but no on revision number four.
And that, again, is on Tuesday, November 5th. There is, by the time this airs, there will be one day of early voting so that you can actually vote on Monday as well. But the election day is Tuesday, November 5th. And I saw you posted something on Facebook on Sunday about supporting the Lower Drug Costs Now Act, which is a Washington initiative. Can we just quickly talk about that and what's at stake there?
Yes. Just to clarify, early voters started October 26th.
Right. When this airs, it'll be...
I posted on the Facebook. We are distributing a phone number you can call if you have not gotten where you can vote near you.
Okay.
So I urge everybody to check that out in case that you cannot do it on November 5th. And likewise, I posted and have been pushing for our members to help us in calling on the Congress to pass H.R. 3, which is a proposed legislation right now that is aimed to lower the cost of prescription drugs. The cost of drugs, prescription drugs, are just astronomical and are threatened to unravel the whole healthcare system. So this is a good, sensible bill that the House is considering, will be considering in the month of November. And then hopefully a vote will take place before the end of November. So we're asking all the members to call the Congress a representative and to urge them to vote yes on H.R. 3. And if you don't know who your representative is, we have posted the information on our website, okay, online with the political action, and you can contact political action for this action. But we are urging everybody to call and urge their representatives, the Congress, to vote yes on H.R. 3.
Henry Garrido is the Executive Director of District Council 37. Thank you very much for the time given to this week to the issues that we're discussing. Henry, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
That's just about all the time we have for this show. Till next time, ciao.